Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Due Process DNA Post-Decision Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 18, 2009, the Supreme Court announced its decision in District Attorney's Office versus Osborne. In this case, the court considered whether Osborne had a post-conviction due process right to access the evidence used against him in order to subject it to DNA testing. In a 5-4 decision delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court concluded that facially, Alaska's procedures and federal procedures for post-conviction relief and access to DNA evidence satisfied procedural due process. In addition, the court declined to recognize a substantive due process right of access to DNA evidence. To discuss the decision, we have S.J. Quinney College of Law at the University of Utah, Professor Paul Cassell. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Cassell.
I'm here to talk today about the recent Supreme Court decision in District Attorney's Office for the 3rd District versus Osborne. It's an interesting case involving whether there's a constitutional right of prisoners to get access to DNA testing. Here are the basic facts. Back in 1993, two men and a woman, KG are the initials of the woman, were in a car in a remote area of Anchorage, Alaska. And the two men raped the woman, they beat her, and then they shot her in the head, left her to die. She did not die. She survived and gave a description of the two men that attacked her. And then eventually the police found William Osborne, an associate who matched the description of the attackers, found a car that matched the description of the attack and some physical evidence, shotgun shells and things like that that looked similar to that left at the scene of the crime. At that point, the police began to investigate whether the physical evidence, the semen that had been left at the scene of the crime, matched Osborne's, and they were able to narrow it down to 16% of the relevant population of the racial group that Osborne was a member of. And at that point, they asked the defense attorney whether she wanted to try to narrow the population range down even further, and she said no, that was sufficient. And so the government went to trial with DNA evidence, narrowing it down to 16% of the relevant population and the other circumstantial evidence tying Osborne to the crime. He was convicted and sentenced to a lengthy prison term. At that point, he then began to pursue post-conviction remedies to try to get more discriminating DNA tests done. The Alaska courts, however, rejected his claims on two grounds. They said first that there was the opportunity for more discriminating DNA testing to be done at trial, and Osborne, through his attorney, had simply declined to do that. And secondly, in any event, Osborne had never shown that he was likely to be innocent. There was a very strong case against him, and Osborne had never provided sufficient evidence to show that the DNA test would, in fact, prove he was innocent. In fact, interestingly, in 2004, Osborne filed a sworn affidavit with the parole board in Alaska saying that he was, in fact, guilty of the crime, and he repeated that statement under oath directly to the parole board. Nonetheless, Osborne went into federal court to argue that he had a federal constitutional right to have DNA testing done on the crime scene evidence, more discriminating DNA testing done. And the district court agreed with his claim and found that there was, in fact, a constitutional right to DNA testing on the facts of the case. The Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit agreed with the district court, affirmed its decision, and the U.S. Supreme Court granted certiorari. Now, just recently, on June 18, 2009, Chief Justice Roberts released a 5-4 decision reversing the Ninth Circuit and finding that there is no right to force, through the Constitution, a state to provide DNA evidence for testing. Justice Roberts was joined in his opinion by Justice Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, and Alito. The basic point that Chief Justice Roberts made in his decision is that this is something that Congress and the states have been looking at very carefully. As of the time of the decision, Congress had already passed a law providing for access to DNA testing of all federal prisoners. At that point, 47 states had also provided for access to it through various court procedures or statutes. Generally, however, those procedures provided, as did the Alaska procedures, that the defendant had to show a likely case of actual innocence at trial and would also have to show that, in fact, the defendant had not waived a right to pursue DNA testing or not deliberately forfeited the opportunity to do that. Justice Alito, joined by Justices Kennedy and Thomas, wrote a concurring opinion. They argued that the only way to proceed to even get into court on these types of claims was through a federal habeas corpus proceeding. And there were four dissenting justices, the lead dissent written by Justice Stevens, joined by Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer, and Justice Souter in part. Their basic argument was that the Constitution should provide access to prisoners seeking DNA testing because of the power of DNA tests to establish once and for all the actual innocence or actual guilt of a defendant. And they felt that in this particular case, the Alaska court procedures had not provided Osborne a sufficient opportunity to litigate his claims. Justice Souter also wrote an individual dissent. He said that the Alaska procedures were flawed in that they required a showing of actual innocence. He would provide for more generous opportunities for prisoners to obtain access to DNA testing. I think the opinion has three points of significance. First, I think it shows that the court continues to be narrowly divided on some of these contentious issues. It's a 5-4 decision, splitting along the normal ideological lines that we've seen in the court. And it suggests that there are going to be, I think, a great deal of attention paid to future Supreme Court nominees, such as Judge Sotomayor, the reason being that one justice here or there could tip the ideological balance on cases such as this one. Secondly, however, I think that with the current court majority, there is going to be strong deference to federalism. The Supreme Court, under the guidance of Chief Justice Roberts' opinion, is going to allow states to experiment on issues such as how to provide access to DNA testing, and I think many other areas as well, in criminal justice and civil law, a wide range of areas. They're going to look to the laboratory of the states to provide solutions to problems such as how to deal with DNA testing, and I would expect that trend to continue. Finally, one last interesting point about the opinion is I think it shows us that technology marches on. This was a case that arose from facts that began back in 1993 when the discriminating DNA tests were not available. Of course, now in 2009, any person who's charged with rape would have access to the discriminating DNA test, and so perhaps some of the concerns that Osborne raises are fading into the past. And so that's the Supreme Court's recent decision in District Attorney's Office for the 3rd Judicial District versus Osborne.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.